The thousand-year-old Taos Pueblo is regarded as America's longest continuously inhabited community. Just a mile from the small town of Taos, New Mexico, the Pueblo is the only Native American community designated as a UNESCO World Heritage Site and a National Historic Landmark. I'm Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me at Taos Pueblo for a walkabout with Ilona Spruce, the Pueblo's tourism director, and her assistant, Noreen Maribel.
My name is Ilona Spruce, and I'm the tourism director for Taos Pueblo.
My name is Noreen Maribel, and I'm the tourism assistant for Taos Pueblo Tourism.
Right in front of us is a beautiful Catholic church.
The church is one of the newer buildings. It was built in 1850. We do still practice the Catholic religion very diligently. We have everything from weddings to baptismals to funerals that are held inside of the church. With that, though, there's a dual piece to that because we still maintain our native religion.
So you never lost that?
No. What we did was, in order to survive the Spanish when they came into the area, we just took on the church, but we also kept our native religion intact secretly. With that, there's always two pieces to every celebration. We don't allow photography inside the church, but it is open to the public to go in and view. When we do walk in there, you'll see like there's no electricity in there. There's propane lighting. There's no running water in this area.
About 70% of the tribal members here are Catholic, but I'd say probably about 90 to 95% practice both religions, our native religion and Catholicism.
Oh, this is beautiful.
Here is our church, and what we were talking about with the two religions coinciding, the central figure is the Virgin Mary. And we think of the Virgin Mary as Mother Earth. And so you'll notice the two corn stalks that are painted on the sides of her, because for us, corn is everything. Corn is our life. Mm-hmm. And so we depict that with the Virgin Mary as well. You'll notice to the right, you'll see a casket. That casket was put there by our people as a reminder of how Catholicism was brought by the Spaniards. It brought slavery, it brought condemnation of our own religion. And so that is put there as a reminder mm-hmm. to our people that, yes, that happened, but we are here coinciding.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's powerful. That's an important question, is because Catholicism was intertwined with the Spanish, you know.
And exactly.
So the conquerors bring their religion to you.
Well, you know, with the conquerors, they like to say they came in the name of the three G's, God, glory, and gold. Mm-hmm. That's the conquistador mind frame. As Ilona had talked about earlier, in order to survive, we had to adapt. And so this is us adapting.
And are there any other dualities that we see up there?
With the saints, we change their clothes to go with the seasons. Late spring, she's dressed in pink. Come summertime, she'll be blue. And in the fall, she'll be in fall colors, which are like a golden to burnt orangish. We have community members who do make and provide the clothes for our saints. And then in the wintertime, she's in white. And of course, during Lent, she's covered with a purple shroud.
Do you have santeros here, the icons?
We do have them. Our patron saint is Saint Geronimo. And so you'll see to the left, that is San Geronimo himself. You'll see our newest saint, which is the Native American saint, Saint Kateri Tekawitha, who was recently canonized. She's also a very important component to our religion now. She's probably, I'd say, the most contemporary. It was a big deal in all of Indian country because she's Mohawk from back east. But her being Indian and the miracles that she did make happen, it really hit home for a lot of Native communities, so a lot of us celebrate her as well.
Well, let's go outside and enter pre-Christian era in the
Taos
Pueblo.
Let's do it.
Great. Ilona, you were mentioning that
The earliest archaeological evidence of habitation in this area was around 750 AD, correct?
Yes. Newer studies that have been done in the surrounding area, particularly here on the Pueblo, there hasn't been any archaeological digging or anything like that that has happened, or even carbon dating on the buildings.
Because it's not allowed.
It's not allowed, yeah. With that, a lot of the dating comes from the surrounding areas, such as the Pot Creek area. There's other areas further out near the gorge. And the reason for no archaeological digging and so forth is that that doesn't really set precedence for us. We believe we've been here for time immemorial. Right. And that's the famous Pueblo saying, is time immemorial. Which is true, you know, we don't put a date on how long we've been in the area because we believe that we're here and we're taking care of it, protecting it. And we still coincide with the land as well. Mm-hmm. So with that, as you can see, with this whole area here, we do still maintain it and we do still take care of it. We do have about 50 to 100 people who live in here throughout the year. In the wintertime, it fluctuates at a higher number. You would think it would go down. But that's kind of a traditional routine, is that a lot of our people do like to come in here and move in here during the wintertime.
What's the draw?
Long time ago, you went in the summertime and you lived on the outside area and you mainly worked with your fields and your corn, your beans, your squash, whatever you were growing that year. Then in the wintertime, you came in here and the families came together. It's kind of just transferred into today. For instance, like with our family in particular, you know, I can't speak for everybody else, but I know that a lot of families do come in here, especially during the Christmas holidays. Mm-hmm. We're in here from about a week before Christmas till like a week after January 6th. On a side note, we've moved all of our traditional holidays or traditional celebrations onto saint days, and that was due to the Spanish. That was the only way we were able to maintain those days. Mm-hmm. We have dances on Christmas, dances on New Year's Day, and dances on January 6th, which is All King's Day.
Are any of those events open to the public?
They are all open to the public. We do welcome the visitors from the outside to come in and to share in those celebrations. But we do ask for the respect to be given back. In that manner, it's no photography or take pictures. Yeah. So that's pretty much where that's at. But in maintaining this area, it is a challenge. These buildings are over 1,000 years old. And so with that, the maintenance on them is very high.
These are all adobes.
Yes. The adobe structures take wear and tear. So every year we come in here and we have to remud our home with the mud straw water mixture. We just remud them. And traditionally, a long time ago, it was the females in the community who would do it. But today, it's turned into the males do it.
Uh-huh. About time.
So now it's all family done, though. You know, we come in and we help our uncles and our cousins as well. So
the wall's about 3 to 4 feet thick. As you can see, the adobes right here, which are pretty thick themselves, but just over the years of applying and applying and applying. And so in the summertime, it's great. It's nice and cool from the outside. And on winter days, the heat is retained inside because the walls are so thick. The shadows that you're looking at, they're from our drying racks. And you'll notice them throughout the village. They were used to dry anything from our vegetables, our basically our harvest, to hides, to our meat.
And then in the wintertime, we would put our wood up on top. Over here, you're also going to see the ovens, better known as the horno. We usually refer to them as bacutus. We still use them today, and they're primarily used and operated by the women. We do still use them to cook. There are some other Pueblo communities who cook more than just baked goods in them, like everything from turkeys to their feast food. But for here, we still use them, but mainly for the baked goods, like the yeast bread and pies, cookies. We can walk over and I'll show you the inside of one. The cedar is a hotter burning wood. As you can see, there's cedar inside there already waiting to be burned. So we just burned a fire in here. Then we bring our pies out, and we still use pie pans and things like that. It's somewhat contemporary. You learn how to use your oven, how it cooks, and how to man it. Then you don't have to continuously check in on it. With some of the changes in the community or changes in family, sometimes the homes aren't as well taken care of as they should be. And so the community has recognized that. Sometimes we just have elderly who have homes who don't have the means
or family
to go in and help them maintain their home.
Like a community assistance?
Yeah, in some shape and form it is. So the tribe has taken it upon themselves to help out individuals with homes like this, and that's what you see here. This whole section has been redone. With redoing them or the remodeling it, they've also brought everything back to how it used to be. For instance, like you see all wooden doors,
wooden windows.
Mm-hmm. The drainage system. Right there you can see the metal, but on the rest of them it's wooden, the drainages.
Mm-hmm. So trying to be as authentic.
Yeah, so it's bringing it back to how it used to be. That project will move in sections, restore some of these homes that have been broken down. And then it'll also help us remanage the homes as well.
In front of us, it looks like an abandoned church.
What we're standing in front of is the original church, the original San Geronimo Church. It was built in 1619. The Spanish came into the area in the late 1500s. That was our first contact. In that time period, like Noreen had mentioned earlier, there was slavery that went on here with the Spanish. So this church was built by force. In that time period, between 1619 and 1680, there was a lot of religious persecution going on, slavery going on, slave trade. So in that time period, there was a lot of anger towards the Spanish. So in 1680 is the year of the Pueblo Revolt. The revolt included every Pueblo from Taos to Acoma Laguna down in that area, and it also included the Hopi people as well, even though they weren't being directly affected. And the only Pueblos that did stay out of it, like I had mentioned, their involvement was Acoma, but it was due to what had happened to them just a few years ago from Oñate. Oñate had come in, he had just cut off the feet and their hands, right?
Every right foot of every male person from the age of 12 all the way up until I believe it was about around 50. Mm-hmm. And the rest from 12 and under were all put into slavery and sent to Mexico.
The other village that decided to stay out was Santo Domingo. With the other Pueblos, we all rounded up together and we revolted against the Spanish, and the Spanish were driven back out into the Mexico-Texas area. That lasted for about 12 years, and then they came back into the area. After that period, when we established that we're here and they're down there, and that's when the town plaza was really established, was after that time period.
And the Mexican land grants were also created as well.
Yeah.
In this area.
Yes. With that, we coincided with each other after that point. There was a lot of intermarriage and so forth. So the church was rebuilt, I guess, during that time. There's numerous stories of that it was just abandoned or that it was burned, but basically we just revamped it and brought it back into the community. For about 100 years, we were coinciding with them, and we taught them how to be in the area, how to live in the area.
The crops to grow.
In the 1800s is when we first saw the flux of Americans coming into the area from the east, along with other factors created the Mexican-American War in the mid-1800s. In 1847, there was a governor actually appointed to the area. His name was Governor Bent.
The first Anglo governor.
Yeah, Charles Bent. He was appointed to the territory. The Spanish were threatened by that, and so were the native people, and he was actually slain in his house. It was all blamed on the native people, and so in retaliation, they actually brought the cavalry out here. And instead of us trying to fight, we thought there would be sanctuary in the church. Just like how the Spanish saw sanctuary, we thought the Americans would see it as well. So we actually placed our women and children inside the church, and then the rest of the community fled up into the mountain area, and then some of us also were ready to endure what was going to come into the community here. Well, nothing came into the community, but they did bomb the church.
With the women and children inside.
And they all died.
Mm-hmm. really what it turned into is our cemetery, and we've continuously used it after that time. And this is another remembrance of what the community has gone through as well.
And that was not that long ago in history.
No, it wasn't.
It seems to me in my time with Native peoples, Native people have a different sense of time than the white men, in that something that was 150 years ago, say, is very fresh in the memories of the Native people, painfully so sometimes.
Yes, I would say so. It's still quite fresh. I mean, we have the building standing right here in front of us.
A reminder of what our grandparents and great-grandparents endured, as well as, you know, our grandparents have told us, and their grandparents as well. And so, you know, these stories were told as if it just did happen last month or yesterday. And it's kind of a reminder of an importance that we continue being who we are and continue to maintain our culture.
It takes a tough spirit to not have negativity and resentment for the Anglo people who come here, because they symbolize and represent that evil period.
Right, but like we've always talked about, tourism and visitors coming to visit our home, you know, it goes hand in hand. And so I think right now with where we're at, it's just about educating people.
Nothing beats education.
Yeah. A lot of the general public don't realize everything that has happened in this area. There's a huge piece of American history that's here, and that's not brought out to the public. So when they come into our community, we're able to tell that story.
And see it.
Yeah, and see it, feel it, smell it. You know, you're able to be here. Even vice versa with the town area, the Spanish community is able to tell their history as well. You know, they've been here for quite some time as well. You know, they have roots here now. Mm-hmm. And so it gives all the communities an opportunity. And that's what's so neat about New Mexico, is that there's a very distinct diversity in history.
I have grown up with images of the main adobe, the plaza area. Mm-hmm. Let's walk over there.
Okay. Right here you can see is a prime example of homes that just naturally disintegrate when there's no one to care for them. With the adobe, it naturally disintegrates back into the earth. It is a sad sight, because as a village we should be able to maintain it. But as Ilona had spoke earlier about maintaining the homes, it is a lot of hard work. To be honest, in today's world, that also equals money as well.
The casino, is that Pueblo's casino?
It is the tribe's casino, but the revenue for that goes into the general tribal fund, which helps the tribe's infrastructure.
But one would think that some of that money could be earmarked for your restoration process.
That's the dream.
Yeah. People over structures.
Taking care of the people.
That makes sense.
We see the negatives of those impacts on our community. Money not only from the casino, but even tourism, where that filters into to sustain tribal programs.
The human element.
Yeah. But the tribe is recognizing that this area does need some help, because it used to be the family's responsibility, and now that's not the case. We need to maintain it as well.
You know, Ilona, both her and I coming from the contemporary end of it, I mean, that is the great la-la-la dream, but our reality is no, you know, as a community, we need to start pulling together, meaning monetary-wise, with our economic engines that we do have, money should and needs to be start filtering in, because if we don't do it for ourselves as a community, right there, what you saw back there is example A of what will happen.
Right, it'll be too late to restore. In front of us is probably one of the most picturesque scenes in the entire Southwest.
The multi-storied buildings are probably the most photographed in the Southwest area. It's the view, it's the scenery, it's beautiful here.
Framed by the 3-4-story Adobe Center.
Definitely.
Now, is this the headquarters of the Pueblo, or why is it so grand compared to the other structures?
The multi-storied buildings on either side, which this is the north, what these structures were originally built for is, there's different stories, there's lookout points, because if you are on top of them, you see the whole Taos Valley area. Hmm. They used to be larger. A lot of it was based off of storage.
For grain.
Yeah, storing grain, storing dried foods, anything along that sort. And so the way these homes work is that families can own multiple homes that stack on top of each other. But most of the time, each door is an individual home mm-hmm. to an individual family. There's not necessarily a hierarchy or not a hierarchy in here, but what these homes have done is that they, some of them are community used, and then like I just said, some of them are family owned. There are no ladders on some of these homes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how they get up there.
And that's come with the tourism part. That's a great example of the impact of tourism on the community. A lot of the ladders have been taken down because of people climbing them, but with these homes, a lot of them aren't internally connected. So you do have to come out of your door, go up another ladder, then go up into the second story. And then that's just something how they were built. In some of the other homes, if they are internally connected, it's through a small little ladder
within
that goes
like a corner, yeah. A corner of the room. Mm-hmm. That's where the passage is.
Inside.
Yeah.
These homes, since they're the older ones, the walls can range anywhere from like 3 to 5 feet thick.
Wow.
It's very cool in there, but it's very warm in the winter with a fire. And these homes are still used today. We do still have people who live in these homes, but primarily in the back areas. Again, that's the impact of tourism for privacy, because we do see a lot of people coming through the area. There are also other uses with the bottom homes, which includes some of the shops like you see here. We have had families who have taken advantage of the tourism industry that has come into here, and we do have families who have survived off of having a shop for generations already.
And that's a baker over there?
Yeah, there's baked goods and so forth, which is just an add-on to the shop. Mm-hmm. She mainly sells her jewelry in there. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what the community has adapted to, is that we have this resource, and so they've used it. We're pretty much like in our third or even fourth generation of growing up with this. Like me and Noreen were just talking about the other day, she had mentioned about selling rocks here in the village, painting rocks.
When you guys were kids.
Yeah, when we were kids. When you're little, you grow up in here or you're running around in here. And this is the central part to the community. And then there's certain shops that do sell candy and so forth. And so when you're little, you know, you kind of hang out and you come up here, you buy candy, and then you go and play wherever else you want to go. But in order to buy that candy, sometimes you find your resource, and that's selling to the tourists. And you still see that being done today. Like, we could walk up here during the summertime after the kids get out of school, and you'll find little kids, they'll sell rocks and stuff that they've painted. And that's something that's made the community unique, too, that they've realized that that's a resource for them. And even so forth with the adults, with the parents, with the grandparents. A lot of people have been able to survive because we have this income coming in here. And then the visitors don't mind it either. It adds to it.
Sure, yeah. And it's an opportunity to visit with the people of the Pueblo.
And it gives the opportunity for them to go inside the homes. Mm-hmm. Even though they're not necessarily set up like a home, they're more set up like as a business or a small shop. Mm-hmm. It still gives the opportunity to even go in there, to smell the home, to be in it, to feel the walls, you know, and so forth. It works both ways. It works in everybody's favor.
Last night, I stayed at the Taos Inn.
Oh, yeah.
And the girl, Francesca, goes, "Oh, I live at the Taos Pueblo." So I imagine there are quite a few people that live in the Pueblo but work in Taos.
Yes, that's pretty common. If you don't work for the tribe, you do work in town. And then vice versa, we employ people from town as well here on the Pueblo. Not necessarily inside here, but in our tribal program. It goes both ways. And so that's really like how the town of Taos and the Pueblo have learned to coincide with each other. We work together to support the community as a whole. Mm-hmm. And so I think that works out really well.
And I presume that the casino down the road has been an important employer for people of the Pueblo.
It has been. I would say the casino has employed quite a few people from the Pueblo, and then vice versa. Again, it employs a lot of people from the town area as well. So it has been a good employment source for the community.
Right now, we're in what looks to be a grand plaza, and I imagine this is where dances would take place and the feast days.
Yes, our traditional feast days do take place in this area. Our dances usually happen in front of the church and then along here, along the north side. So we're going to be crossing the Rio Pueblo de Taos, which is also known as the Red Willow Creek, to the community as well.
So this is your life source historically?
Yes, it is. Today we still can drink the water. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the last places, I believe, especially in the Southwest. The water here is still drinkable, but of course we tell everybody not to drink it because we're used to it. The water is fed by a natural lake about 25 miles up into the mountain area, which is known as Blue Lake. Blue Lake is a, I guess you could say, a central figure for the Pueblo. That area is actually located up here in the mountain area. It's always a issue when we say we do own the area. But I guess you could say we take care of the area. Right now, the tribe is in care of about over 100,000 acres, and that consists of mainly the Taos Mountain area.
So all the way up that mountainside?
Yeah. The town joke is, that's why there's no houses around here. That's why there's no houses on the mountain. But this area, you know, we don't plan to build on here. We don't plan to extract anything or anything like that. The main purpose or the main priority is to take care of it and to preserve what we have. I mean, this is beautiful just as is.
Oh, yeah. Storybook picture.
Yeah.
Hard for anybody to believe that this could exist anymore. So pristine. Like you said, no houses, nothing.
Yeah.
Just wide open.
And it is still pristine up there. And that's another reason why we keep this area off limits to the public as well. There is an area on the east end of the reservation that we use for guided ram hunts and guided elk hunts as well. So we're starting to venture into that realm of the hunts and things like that.
And that's as an economic driver again?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the reason for the rams and the elks is here, the elk is, you wouldn't believe it, but we have a huge population. And then with the rams, we have a big population as well. It's become a resource for the tribe.
In the Taos Pueblo, in the setting, the river cuts the village in half.
Yes, it does. It cuts it from north to south. And so there is some differences. For instance, we do have like foot races in the early spring on May 3rd. And on September 30th, it's north and south. But other than that, there's not a huge break in the community. I believe the whole reason why we're built around this is to have this water source. Long time ago, the wall used to be anywhere from 10 to 15 feet high, and it was to keep intruders out. To keep them out, we need a source in here to maintain. Then the water is also used still in a traditional manner to irrigate our crops. Those crops mainly consist of corn, beans and squash, and melons. Mm-hmm. The water is used, I guess you could say, to its full extent. And then in more contemporary times, because we have horses and things along that sort, we now have like alfalfa fields and things like that to maintain and take care of those animals. We still use our land in the traditional way that we always have, and we still have ditches that run all over the area. Mm-hmm. And we also have adopted such things as orchards in general. A lot of people have apple orchards. We still use a lot of our own food, you know, in so many ways. We're blessed to have that.
Yeah, it beats McDonald's.
Yeah, it does. Although we do have McDonald's just down the road.
Yeah. Is there electricity here?
That's the big reason why we don't have a big population that lives inside here. The divider is actually the wall. There's no running water or electricity inside the wall. That's to keep the buildings intact. And that's by choice, by the tribe. Outside of the wall, though, there is running water and electricity. And there are contemporary homes.
Ilona and I think we were probably on the trail end of the generation that grew up inside the village and still spent a large part of our lives here inside the village, which had no electricity, which had running water. But at the same time, we still did have our homes within our reservation boundaries. Mm-hmm. And so we know the blessing and we know the hardships of living the lifestyle.
You really have to admire the people mm-hmm. who continue to make this conscious choice to live within the walls.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, you know, if you choose to live in here, you know, it's good for everybody. It keeps this place alive as well. Maintains that factor that we are a living community. I pride that we do still have people who choose to live in here and live in that way. It's a challenge when you have the modern accommodations just sitting right outside and then you're living in this manner. And don't get me wrong, you know, the individuals who do choose to live in here, they're not cut off from the world or anything. Right. You know, they have cell phones, they drive in and out of here. It's just they live in this way. So, and that's a misconception that a lot of our visitors take on, is that just because we live in this manner or we still maintain this part to our identity, that we can't have those modern amenities. Like, they're surprised we're all driving in cars, or they're surprised to see a tribal official pull out a cell phone, pull out an iPhone. That's the way we've always been since contact. Mm-hmm. Since the first day of contact, we've been able to try and balance out those factors, balancing out what's come into the community, you know, which is foreign to us. And, you know, that still continues today. And that's the only way that we've been able to maintain what we do have. And in respect to the visitors, it's the only way that we've been able to maintain this, so they can come here and enjoy it as well. So here in the community, I think a lot of Indigenous communities that are open to the public, is that the most important thing is that when visitors come in, is they have to understand is that the main focus is to preserve and to protect. And sometimes that's not always communicated in a positive manner as well. There's a certain level of respect that you have to come in here with. You have to come knowing that we're a living community and that there are limitations to your visit. Not everything is going to be open to the public. There are some restrictions that even we as community members just know of. You know, we don't talk about certain things. Mm-hmm. As you probably realized with me and Noreen in the church, yeah, we talk about the Catholic religion, but we don't really go into detail about the religious pieces to the native religion. That's because that's something that's kept very close to
precious.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And we want to keep it that way. That's what makes the Pueblo interesting too, is that we haven't told everything, you know, about what we do here and what goes on. If you get the opportunity to be here for one of our dances, that's great. You know, you get to at least enjoy a piece of what we do have, of what we are willing to share. When people are able to see the dances or see, like, our big feast day on September 30th, we have the traditional clowns out on that day. When they're able to be immersed in that, you know, I think that to us, you know, that's kind of stretching our welcoming to the public. And, you know, I think that's said for a lot of the public communities with opening their doors up to the public for their feast days. And on those days, or even on an average day, you know, family is the core. And that's what's to be maintained, because that's how the traditions are passed down. That's how the language is passed down. And so each family is going to have those ways of communicating or not communicating with the public. That's something that needs to be understood, is when you come in here that you have to be flexible as well. On the other hand, then we have some extremes, like when we have unexpected closures and things like that.
What would that be from?
Most of the time when we do have an unexpected closure, it's because we've had a funeral in the community. We've had a death in the community. For the most part, most of our visitors are very understanding. But there are some visitors that have come through here who are upset, mad, because we're not open. And I understand, you know, you came all the way across the country, and now we're closed. You know, we're not on show. We're not a museum. We're alive and well. And
community.
Yeah, and there's human attributes that come out. You know, death is one of them. You know, it's, I would hope that, you know, like, the general public would understand and be a little bit more understanding in that realm. Because sometimes there is times where we haven't had that understanding. But I think me and Noreen have done a good job about relaying and communicating with the public about what's going on here
and why
and so forth. And then there's times where, you know, we have other things going on where we just don't go into detail about it. We just tell you we're closed, sorry.
Let's talk for a moment about cultural social issues that you all face.
As a contemporary Native woman being immersed in our 1,000-year-old culture, just like with any culture, any minority group, we do have our social issues, it being alcoholism, violence, domestic violence, child abuse. We have all of those, and a lot of our people here are unemployed. We do have a very high unemployment rate, and so that's where all those negative social issues come into play within our community. And with that, I believe that a lot of people are in the mentality of still having historical trauma that was brought on the forefront from First Contact. And it's a sad thing to say that a lot of people don't have the inner strength, don't have the family strength to look past that, to use that as a driving force to become something better, to do something as a positive for your people. But, you know, we do have tribal programs set up to address those social problems and help our people out.
Let's talk about unemployment for a moment. The other day you were telling me the stat, and it is sobering. How many are unemployed? What approximately is the number?
The percentage is probably about 60 to 70%. And that is really high.
That's sobering.
Because here on the reservation, if, like Ilona was saying, if you don't own a shop or you don't work for tribal government, and as you've noticed, the town of Taos is rather small, unemployment is really high. Our family and our tribal government, they encourage education. They encourage its young people to go off and get a college education, with the hopes of them coming back and helping our people. And so that's in the realm of Ilona and I. We're fortunate to have that
part family, of your primary mission.
Exactly, family supportive structure. And that's why we are here now working for our community, because we have been out there. We have been fortunate enough to travel mm-hmm. to other Indian communities as well as other
right.
big cities. And so with that, we brought that knowledge home with us in hopes of helping mm-hmm. our community and helping our people.
And both of you obviously had plenty of opportunities at a much higher pay rate to stay in Phoenix or Flagstaff or Albuquerque or Santa Fe.
Exactly, but at the heart of it all, we're what we call Taos Girls.
It's in your heart.
Our family's here, our culture's here, our religion is here. And what our grandparents have taught us, no matter what, we always come back. The mountain, the water, it's the center of who we are.
Yeah.
The water is the blood that runs through our veins. The mountain is our heart. So no matter what, we always come back.
The best way to keep a hold of us is either through the website or just calling our office. So we try and do on this end, we try and work as hard as possible to let the public know about what's going on and making sure that they're aware of when we're open, closed, and whatnot. Ilona Spruce, Taos Pueblo Tourism Director. You can reach the tourism office at 575-758-1028. We're also really easy to reach through email at tourism@taospueblo.com, and then through the website there's also a connecting link to that email. The website is taospueblo.com.
Excellent.
Noreen Maribal, Taos Pueblo Tourism Assistant, and with the information Ilona has given you, you can always reach both of us via email or through the telephone.
Noreen and Ilona, thank you. What a wonderful morning. And I'm glad we got here real early because
mm-hmm.
we were the only ones in the village.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the best time, at least by 9 o'clock. And then in the summertime, it's good to be out here around that time because by afternoon, it's pretty warm out here and people don't realize how hot the sun is out here, and just because it's a cool temperature, you do feel that burn.
Yeah, I can feel it right now in my neck.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Taos Pueblo in northwestern New Mexico.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomascwilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.